Welcome to part one of our three-part Out Loud storytelling project, recorded at South on Main in Little Rock.
This is Paula Morrell, and welcome to the Tales from the South podcast.
How's everybody doing tonight? Woo! Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, a good crowd out there. So, we've got, and I hope you all enjoyed the salty dogs before we got up here. How about the salty dogs? Yeah! Well, if you want to listen to more of that salty, salty music, check out thesaltydogs.net. Okay, you can find more of their music there, thesaltydogs.net. So, welcome to a very special Tales from the South. This is their Out Loud storytelling show where LGBT Southerners and allies bring their own true stories to life. We are on location at South on Main in Little Rock, Arkansas. The Tales from the South is presented by the Midnight Muse Writing Workshops, and tonight's show is sponsored by HRC, the Human Rights Campaign, and Yellow Rocket Concepts. Yes, come on. Thank you to our sponsors, and I will be your guest MC, Tracy Berry. So for those of you out there listening and all those other places, Paula is still with us. I did not kidnap her and shoo her away. She's in the building. On my left here, playing for us tonight is blue guitarist Mark Simpsons. Playing the blues. Thank you, Mark. And on our backdrop here, our set, we have the work of V.L. Cox. V.L. Cox is a passionate advocate for justice. She feels that despite our differences such as cultural, religious, economic, race, or gender, we can choose a peaceful path of tolerance and justice instead of fear, repression, and hatred, using historical elements of the past in projects based on culture and social change. The images in VL's projects visually engage the observer and become a focal point for discussion. So if you want to check out more works from VL, go to www.greatfunart.com. All right, so enough of that business. Are you ready to hear some stories? Yeah, let's give it up. So, all the stories tonight are true and told by Southerners who have lived them. So to go ahead and kick us off, we have Jennifer Armstrong.
Flashback 5 years ago, and I was working for a nonprofit social outreach program providing free tutoring to low-income students. The pay was absolute shit, but it was good work, and it was work that made you feel like you were making a difference. My official title was Director of Administration, which was just a really fancy way of saying that I managed teachers. One morning, I woke up to a frantic phone call from my boss urging me to check my email. The day before, word had come down to part with one of our teachers on staff, and she hadn't taken it very well. I logged into my computer expecting to see something from her, perhaps alleging incompetence or insulting my overall management style. And I don't know that I will ever forget the thing she wrote in that email that she not only sent to my boss, but to two of the school districts for which we provided services. Instead of insulting my ability to do my job, she chose to out me as a lesbian and said that because my girlfriend would occasionally drop me off at work or bring things to me that I needed, that I was exposing children to immoral sexual behavior and warned that I had no business being around little girls. And I stared at that computer screen and I felt a million things. I felt anger at this woman for writing this email. I felt anger at myself for being vulnerable to it. I felt self-loathing. I felt anger at myself for feeling self-loathing. I felt righteous indignation that I had done nothing wrong. And I felt fear, the kind of fear that grips all of you, the kind of fear that puts you on the floor of your office, curled up under your desk with your arms wrapped around your knees because you know the worst hasn't even happened yet, the kind of fear that tells you that you will never again be safe here. And I left that job shortly after. I left education altogether. I left a job that I loved, that I was good at, because I was a lesbian. And I left that job, and I felt ashamed. Flashback 3 years ago, and I had taken a job as a kitchen manager for a large full-service restaurant based out of California. And during our orientation, we went over LGBT rights in the workplace. It was very similar to the military's don't ask, don't tell policy. It said, number one, we don't ask people if they're LGBT. Number two, we don't talk about whether someone is LGBT. And number three, if we happen to find out that someone is LGBT, we don't discriminate against them. And it wasn't perfect, but at least it was something until it wasn't. At the time, I was in a long-distance relationship with a woman who lived in Fayetteville, and she had come down one weekend and had lunch with me at my restaurant. And before she left, we embraced. We hugged. I hugged my girlfriend before she left my restaurant, and less than an hour later, my general manager asked to speak to me privately. And he said that he had seen the looks on some of our guests' faces when my girlfriend left, and it made them uncomfortable. And he didn't come out and say, don't show affection to your significant other, but the implication was there. Your relationship is wrong. It said, your relationship is immoral. It said, your relationship makes decent people feel uncomfortable. And I left that job shortly after. Flashback 2 years ago, when I was the assistant general manager for a full-service restaurant, this one based out of Atlanta. Right before I left to go to Oklahoma, my regional manager came to visit and asked me to sit down. And he said from now on that he did not want me to refer to my wife as my wife. He said that it would be better if I used the word friend or partner or roommate. And I replied that she was, in fact, my wife, and I would refer to her as such. He said, but you aren't really married. And he said, don't get me wrong. I'm doing this out of concern for you. I'm doing this to protect you. I wouldn't want people to judge you managing all these young girls and being gay. And when he said the word gay, he lowered his voice, he looked over both of his shoulders, and he used motherfucking air quotes, as if he were ashamed to say it, as if it were shameful, as if I should be ashamed. And while I was in Oklahoma, he emailed a document out asking us to update our emergency contact information. And when it asked for relationship status of your emergency contact, I paused and I typed wife. And typing those four letters was so much more than just fingers across a keyboard. Typing those four letters was a moment in time when I stood up and refused to lessen myself, refused to marginalize myself, refused to hinder the best parts of myself because it might, could, possibly, maybe, sort of offend a complete stranger. I typed wife and I hit send. And the next day, I got a phone call from my general manager letting me know that I was under investigation for conduct and not to return to work until further notice. And I hung up the phone and resigned myself to the fact that I was probably going to lose my job because I was a lesbian. And call it karma or kismet or fate or whatever you want, I received a text message from Scott McGee, co-owner and executive chef of Big Orange, Local Lime, and Zaza. And the text said, are you ever going to be ready to come work for me? I need good managers. And so I called him. And when he answered, I just started sobbing. And I told him I was tired of fighting, that I just wanted to go to work and do good work. And I wanted to be judged on the work that I did and not my sexuality. And he said to me, Jennifer, I don't care if you are gay. He said, you can stand on the roof of one of my restaurants and shout to the entire city that you are gay, and I will stand next to you while you do it. And I quit my job that day and went to work as the general manager of Local Lime. In the summer of 2014, when we could get married for all of about 5 minutes, Ben Brainerd, co-owner and executive chef at Local Lime, came to see if he needed to work my shift so that I could go get married. When HB 1228 was a thing, we left work and stood on the steps of the Capitol to watch Scott address the governor urging for a veto. And when my marriage ended, not one of them said to me, aren't you glad you didn't get real married? As if by virtue of being denied a basic human right, my pain was somehow lessened. 5 months After I became the general manager of Local IME, I was promoted to director of operations for Yellow Rocket Concepts. And for the first time, I work for a company that doesn't even need a non-discrimination ordinance, because the very thought of treating someone differently because of who they are is a foreign f***ing concept. Flash forward to present day, and we have 7 restaurants and a brewery. We have over 500 employees. One of my general managers just gay married the shit out of his husband. My ex-wife works for us. And the last manager I promoted is transgender, and I feel stupid even telling you this because it does not even matter. My name is Jennifer Armstrong. I have a wonderful girlfriend, a beautiful 7-year-old son, a job that I love, 2 Chiweenies and a house in KMAC. And for the first time, I am completely free to be myself. Thank you very much.
How about Jennifer Armstrong? Yeah. So Jennifer is mother, girlfriend, and manager of all things restaurant and restaurant accessories. I don't know if you noticed, but she has pretty cool hair. I hear that her girlfriend's pretty cool as well. And I think that her girlfriend is pretty excited that she didn't get married during that 5 minutes. Okay, but I'm just saying. All right, next up we have Will Dunn.
When I grew up and found myself, my mother threw Bible scriptures at me to make it known that I was going to hell. It made me sad that I was thought about in this manner, because I loved God and I wanted to praise Him and I wanted to be a good little Christian. I hadn't changed that much, I thought, from when I was a kid. Changed a little bit. I was a little bit taller. I was a bit hairier. And I was much more handsome than I was when I was a kid. But I was the same. I was the same person that I was when I was a child. I was a typical mama's boy, brought up in a small town in Alabama where my family was very religious. My mom, every day that the doors of Halls Memorial CME Church was open, we was at church Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon, Wednesday night Bible study, revival, we were there. Nothing ever changed. We were all very religious. My mother was a Sunday school teacher. She was in the choir. She was the secretary treasurer of the church. My father was a trustee and a custodian for the church. So we were always there. I was a musician, and I was the Sunday school assistant Sunday school for one of the children's classes. And I was also one of the babysitters for the baby nursery. I was also a well-mannered youngest child of my brothers and sisters, and I was the youngest grandchild. I was never the sportsy type. I always sat on the ground and watched them as they played, trying to be as cute as I could be. And then I would run inside the house and be with my mom, because I was a big mama's boy. As I got older, I used to ask my mom, what's changed about the church? What's changed about God? Because when I was a child growing up, you couldn't stand in the pulpit. It was forbidden. Women couldn't be behind the pulpit. You could not wear jeans if you were a woman, or you couldn't wear pants. You couldn't do any of that. But if you walked into Halls Memorial CME Church today, those things are okay. So who changed? I would ask my mom, who changed? Did God change or did we change? She would look at me and she would say, Wilfred, you're trying to twist the word of God. You're blaspheming. And I was like, well, it seemed like a logical question to me. Because God was, to me, was the same. Yesterday, today, and forever, he's always the same. So who was changing? Was it God or me? I would even ask my mom, what is a Christian? And she would say, you know what a Christian is. We used to always talk about it. A Christian was one that believed in Jesus Christ and repented of their sins. And I said, Mama, I've done that. She said, Wilfred, you don't understand. And I was like, Mom, you don't understand. Because God loves me just like he loves everybody else. I don't believe in the doctrine or the theology that love the sinner, hate the sin. Because I love a man, that's not a sin. God is about love. He's about loving everyone you can. And just because you're different from me does not mean that I need to hate you. Love is God. I continue to this day to tell her that I do not believe in what you believe. I love you as you are, and you're my mom, but I am a gay Christian. God loves me just like he loves you. I cannot believe that God set me up for failure. God knew who I was when he made me, when he created me. He knew that I was going to be gay. So why would he set me up and say, I'm going to make you gay, and I'm going to send you to hell? What kind of God is that to serve? That's not the God that I serve. LGBT people were made for a reason. I was made for a reason, to show the unconditional love of God. I am a gay Christian, and this is my story.
Thank you, Will. Will is an educator here in Little Rock, and he currently holds the Office of Outreach Director for the National Education Association GLBT Caucus. Thank you, Will, and I'm glad I'm not the only one that trips up on the LGBT. God, dog, it's tough. It's tough. All right, next up on the Tales from the South, the Reverend Gwen Fry.
I'll never forget sitting in my grandmother's living room when I was a teen. The whole family was there, and we were sitting cheek to cheek on the couch while others pulled chairs from the kitchen table to join us. As we were sitting there, a tennis tournament, of all things, was on the television. The commentators were talking about some controversy that was happening. There was some woman tennis player by the name of Renee Richards, who is transgender. At that moment, my entire life clicked. You see, I had a name, transgender, and I had an identity. This is what I had felt within my entire life, and now I could connect with it. As the commentators continued the story, my aunt chimed in, "He's a freak." My dad said, "He's a monster." With that, a piece of me died. I buried that moment of self-discovery. I didn't want to be called a freak or a monster. And so I carried that with me for decades. Years later, after years of preparation, the day had finally arrived. It was February 19th, 2014, not too long ago. You see, I was the priest in charge of a church in a town here in Arkansas, and the parish itself was rather progressive, and I thought there might be a chance that if I came out, I could transition in this parish. So on the 19th of February, it all began. There was a vestry meeting, and for my rector's report, I came out to the vestry and told them that I was transgender and that I was going to continue my transition. Discussion and conversation followed. Then one of the vestry members turned to me and said, "Are you going to have eye makeup and will you be wearing curlers in the pulpit next Sunday?" And I flashed back to my grandmother's living room. "He's a freak. He's a monster." As the meeting continued, we agreed that there would be a period of education and conversation before any decisions were made on my future. We also agreed that after the Sunday service, the coming Sunday, that there would be a special coffee hour. That Sunday morning rolled around, and as I walked through the parish hall, it was a full house. There wasn't a seat empty. As I came up to the lectern and stood there and realized that I had never been so vulnerable or intimidated in my entire life, standing there knowing that I was about to tell my parish that I was transgender and that I was transitioning. One thing led to another, and over the next couple of days and after that meeting, people came up to me. Most of the parish came up to me and told me, "Oh, how brave you are. Oh, you're so courageous. We support you." And for the next few days, there were plenty of pastoral calls and emails that were sent and media to moderate. There were conversations with families where, yes, mother was against daughter and father was against son and children were against their parents. They were split because of this issue. On Tuesday, I started receiving resignation letters from staff. They couldn't be associated with the church because it would affect their business. Wednesday morning, I woke up, and I knew that this wasn't going to end well. So I called the bishop, and I said, "Bishop, the church is falling apart. It's splitting at the seams. Please do something. Please do some graceful thing to dissolve the pastoral relationship." And so that evening, there was yet another special vestry meeting, this time including the entire parish, where the senior warden read the letter from the bishop that did just that, dissolved the pastoral relationship. And just like that, it was over. It was a funny thing about that moment because there was a great sense of peace that came over me as I excused myself from that meeting and walked out of that building for the very last time. The next morning I woke up and a friend of mine from a local parish called and personally invited me to church. It was a 6 o'clock service and it was really laid back and pretty chill. And so she said, "You know, it would be a place where you could come and find a safe space. It would be like a sanctuary where you could come and worship." I told her thank you, and I thought about it. And one day led into another, and I woke up on Sunday, and by Sunday afternoon, I absolutely realized that I needed to reconnect with God and be in community. So I got dressed. And I walked out the door for the very first time as Gwen. to go to church. I wept when the gospel reading was read. You see, it was a story about Jesus on a mountaintop physically being transformed before the disciples Peter, James, and John. It was as if he was showing his internal self, the ground of his being, his authentic self, to those disciples. I realized, with all the chaos and craziness of the week before, I had forgotten what day it was. It was the last Sunday in Epiphany. I'll never forget. It was the Sunday of the Transfiguration. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Reverend Fry. Reverend Fry is an Episcopal priest, and she is very actively involved in the work for ensuring that justice for all really does mean for all. How about all of the storytellers that we had tonight? Yeah. Yeah, they did a great job. Thank you guys so much. So real quick, thank you to all of our writers, all of our storytellers. Thank you to our live audience, all of you guys. Thank you to South on Main for hosting us tonight. And thank you to UALR Public Radio. Tales from the South is presented by the Midnight Muse Writing Workshops, and tonight's show is sponsored again by the Human Rights Campaign, HRC, and Yellow Rocket Concepts. Additional support provided by UALR School of Mass Communications, the Writers Colony at Derry Hollow, Little Rock Soiree Magazine, UALR's Department of Rhetoric and Writing, the North Little Rock Visitors Bureau, the Arkansas Arts Council, and Oxford American, the Southern Magazine of Good Writing. You can find us, Tales from the South, on Facebook, Twitter, and Stitcher, Smart Radio, and you can download and listen to our podcast on our website. We are open for submissions from all Southerners, and more can be found at talesfromthesouth.com. Thank you guys so much for being here tonight. Thank you for your support. It means so much to our community. Please keep doing what you're doing. Okay. Have a good night.
Out Loud Storytelling was conceived, produced, and directed by Hillary Trudell. Ms. Trudell is a longtime ally who believes in the power of story to create positive social change. She currently resides in Little Rock, Arkansas.
Writer accommodations for Tales from the South provided by Robinwood Bed and Breakfast in Little Rock. More at robinwoodbnb.com. And the Baker House Bed and Breakfast in North Little Rock. More at bakerhousenlr.com. Live sound and studio assistance provided by the UALR School of Mass Communication. You too can experience Tales in person as a member of our live audience. We're now traveling throughout Arkansas and the South, bringing Tales to your community. Details on hosting a live show, our schedule, and ticket information can all be found on our website, talesfromthesouth.com. Thanks for keeping the art of Southern style storytelling alive. And we'll see you next week on Tales from the South.
Well, the preacher said all he wanted to say, wanted us all. Telling us how rock and roll will never stay. And all the sinners, the lovers, and the concubines living on peace and a bottle of wine. Me and the boys are too scared to do anything tonight. Shouting out, brother, sing that hillside. Shout it out, sister, while you're sitting in your upper room. Texas, off of heaven's sakes. Say a long prayer tonight, and I hope it takes. Shout it out, brother. Sing that hillside tune. Shout it out, sister. Warning us all about the judgment day, telling us how rock and roll will never stay.